It's about 2 years since Irene Austin came into this studio and talked about the work of Hearts Welcomes Syrian Families. Irene, at that stage, you talked to me about the way in which your organisation had taken up a challenge, which in a sense had been thrown up by central government when it said, we as a country will take 20,000 Syrian individuals in family groups into this country. Not a very big number, but it's what we had to live with. Tell me how the organisation's gone on since then, because you've changed your aims a little bit. Is that right? Or the conditions have changed?
Yes, I think the conditions have changed. We started off very much lobbying for the county council and the local authorities to take on the scheme, which they did, apart from Broxbourne, who hasn't participated in the scheme and still hasn't. We started off as a lobbying organisation, but then when families began to arrive, our role began to change. So we now see three key aspects of our role, which is about welcoming, which is about supporting the families, and which is about helping with integration. As we developed, we also realised that although we'd formalised our constitution, and our constitution was not limited to just Syrian refugees, it was much wider. It was for all refugees in Hertfordshire that were signposted to us or that we came across, and asylum seekers if need be. We also decided that we needed to become a charity. So we registered as a charity in April of 2016. One of the things that has come up, that language is quite key to integration, and we were watching a very mixed provision and access to English language teaching across Hertfordshire, and we saw the role of the befriender and the language supporter as quite important. So in the first year, where the Refugee Council have the contract in 8 of the 9 councils, they put in befrienders, and we then said as an organisation we would take on that role from year 2 to 5. So we've been bidding for funds and a 1 year post for a volunteer coordinator to start taking on that.
Just tell me again the relevance of the 5 years there, because the programme of 20,000 individuals to be welcomed into the country was a five-year project, that was spread over 5 years.
Yes.
Does that mean at 5 years after they've got to go?
At the end of 5 years, they will have to apply for indefinite leave to remain. And so we see at that stage we might be needed also to help with funds for that and the process for that. But they will have to apply at the end of the 5 years for indefinite leave to remain.
Now, you've brought with you a young man who's clearly got no language problem, speaks English fluently. Karim, welcome. You have come to this area with the help of the scheme, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Me and my family used to live in Lebanon before we come to England, and it just became very hard for us to cope there after about 5 to 6 years of living in Lebanon. And my dad just thought that we had to leave. We didn't have any future there, and it was very dangerous for us to stay there. And he just thought that we had to find a way of leaving. And so we applied to a scheme brought by the UNHCR. I think it was a humanitarian protection scheme or something like that. After about 2 years, we got a call that our file was accepted by the British Embassy and that we were accepted to be resettled in the United Kingdom. And my dad was absolutely happy about it, and he wanted us just to leave and end up in a safe place.
Now, the safety is accentuated by the fact that Lebanon is not your home country. Syria is your home country.
Yeah.
You were born in Homs, and that's where your family came from, which was the beginnings of the standing up against the government, was it not?
Yeah, Homs was one of the first cities that started to protest against the government. At the start of the so-called war, it was more of a request for a couple of very basic human rights to be provided for the people of the country. However, the government didn't take it very easily, and the people didn't stop asking for their rights, because obviously in developed countries such as the United Kingdom, it's very, very basic for people to be able to say if whether they like someone in the government or not. While the president of Syria didn't like it, and the government sent their forces to stop that kind of protests and actions that were caused by the people. They called it riots, they called it terrorism. However, it was merely just people asking for their human rights.
And my guess is that you were aged about 11 or 12 at that point. How long did you stay in Homs after the beginnings of violence?
We didn't really want to leave. It was very dangerous, don't misunderstand me. But yeah, my family didn't want to leave until me and my other siblings had finished our education, or at least the current year that we were in. We spent about a year, roughly, with all the violence and the war going on around us. And we've seen a lot in that long year.
And then you went to Lebanon from Syria. You didn't know whether it was a holding stage. You didn't know whether you were going to stay there and go back. You didn't know what you were going to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Basically, my dad used to work in Lebanon for about 20 years, I would say. He used to work in Lebanon since the 90s. So when the war started off and it wasn't very safe for us to stay in Syria, my dad just proposed to us to move to Lebanon or do something else. But considering that he was living in Lebanon and he knew what life would be like in Lebanon, he was like, come join me in Lebanon and we'll live here until the events probably stop or the country becomes a safer place, which was probably speculated to be a short thing. So we thought we'll go there, spend the summer after I finish my year seven, and we'll come back after for schools and everything else. And we thought we'll spend a good time in Lebanon during them 2 months. But then after 2 months, it didn't cool off. It just stayed going on and on. It actually escalated more and more. My dad wasn't happy about us to go back, but my siblings really pushed hard for us to go back and live our normal life as if there was nothing, even though all the violence was going on in Syria. They just wanted to go back to their home country, to their people, to their friends and everything else, their normal lives. We went back and spent about 10 days. My dad went back to Lebanon and carried on with his job and everything else. A couple of days after my dad left to Lebanon, the army just broke into our neighborhood and started shooting on people. They broke in with a lot of weapons, heavy weapons and light weapons. They came in with tanks and everything you would imagine. They shot at people. They tortured people in the streets. One of the scenes that I recall very distinctly is my dad's cousin's car being ran over by a tank. It was very terrible seeing that after the army left. And during that day, the army came into our building, which was owned by my dad and my uncles, and they searched everything. They humiliated everyone in the building that was there, and they more or less destroyed the flat and the apartments that the people of that apartment weren't there, and stole whatever they wanted. Yeah, at that point, my mom and my eldest brother thought, we have to go to Lebanon. We have to leave the country. So the very next day, they just called a taxi and we left the country. We fled the country to my dad with nothing on us, just the clothes that we were wearing, nothing else.
And so is this, I gotta say, typical, Irene, of the situation? People will be coming to this country, having been selected, if you like, by an agency which has said, here is a family that is vulnerable, one reason or another. And so they're identified, and the British system accepted them as one of the allocated number. Then what happens next? Do they tell you?
The scheme works that you went to Lebanon, but actually Lebanon became as unsafe as Syria because of Hezbollah and the militia.
Yeah, after the war started, it just became a smaller kind of branch of Syria because there are a lot of allies and militias that worked alongside of the Assad regime, the Syrian regime in Lebanon.
So under this scheme, you would have gone through a selection procedure. You would have been accepted. In the initial stages, it came to the Home Office, who sent it out to the East of England Strategic Migration Partnership, who sent it out to local authorities here to say, are there any local authorities who would take this family? And they would have given a profile of the family. The funding then came straight to the East of England later, and then the East of England would have approached local authorities, And the local authority would have had to say yes. They would have had to find the accommodation and they would have received a certain amount of money from the government. And it is, you're right, a five-year scheme, but a decreasing scheme. So most of the money is the first year, then it reduces to the second year. They're hoping that some of the families after the second year would be independent. But if you're talking about a vulnerable person scheme, yes, the younger people are finding work, but not all of them are finding work. So there should be support, even if it's scaling down for 5 years. And in Hertfordshire, 8 of the 9 local authorities commissioned with the Refugee Council to provide the main casework. Decorum had their own team. So what we did as Hearts Welcome Syrian Families is we worked alongside the Refugee Council, and we're still working very closely with the Refugee Council and Decorum to see what support was needed and what we could provide. So initially, we didn't take any volunteers ourselves. We signposted volunteers to the Refugee Council. So I became a volunteer for the Refugee Council. Then as it developed and we decided we needed to take on our own volunteers, because after the second year, the volunteers befriended from the Refugee Council were being pulled out. And also we needed volunteers because we were planning events for the families. We were doing activities to help integration. So we have started now to take on our own volunteers and to organise DBS and all our policies and procedures. And that's really when we thought we need to be a charity, we need to be a proper organisation.
So my guess is, apart from your three targets which you raised at the beginning, that you're also looking for volunteers and you must be looking for funds as well.
We've got plenty of volunteers, actually. Our website, and because we do a lot of talks, we're quite well known. We've spent 2 years linking with as many organisations as we can. So the volunteers keep coming in. We've got a good network of volunteers. We have enough funds to do immediate things, but for instance, we need a volunteer coordinator. She's only funded for a year, so we're starting to apply for funds again so that she continues. And we now have 41 families across Hertfordshire, and it is a complex picture.
As one of those families, Kelly, you were found accommodation when you arrived. Mm-hmm. What sort of accommodation was that?
I must say it was quite shocking at first, arriving in England and seeing the sort of accommodation that was provided for us. There was me, I was just turning 18, and my brother was about 23 years old, and they provided us with a flat with 2 bedrooms, and bedroom of me and my brother, it was literally, I would say, smaller than this studio. It was around 2 meters of width and 2 meters of length, and it had bunk beds, and I couldn't sleep on the second deck of the bunk bed as it was quite close to the ceiling, and I would hit my head every time I would raise it.
Well, it was designed for 2 small children. There you were, an 18-year-old and a 23-year-old mm-hmm. in a bunk beds in a small room. If you would have been used to much better than that, much better accommodation where you were before,
yeah,
in your own home.
I have to point out one thing. I'm absolutely grateful for the effort and work that the Refugee Council and the organisation Hearts Welcome Syrian Refugees have provided since we've come to the country. And as for the flat, I'm really not blaming anyone, because they have absolutely done an amazing work since we've come to England.
So you're in education full time. I think your brother's at university already.
Yeah.
And you, I guess you're aiming for the same.
When I first came in England, I had already had a qualification from back in Lebanon when I graduated high school. But when I came here and sent it to verifying kind of sources, like, they said that it wasn't enough for me to go straight to university, so I had to do something else. They said I had to do A-levels, which at the time I didn't know what it was. But at first, the Refugee Council enrolled me on a language course, as my language when I arrived wasn't sufficient for me to go to university or to do A-levels even. And so I thought when I arrived, I have to graft for it. I have to do a lot of work in order for me to continue my education and not lose as many years as I might if I didn't have sufficient English level of English. And so they put me on that English language course when I arrived. arrived, and I finished it by June 2017. Yeah, I spent about six, seven months doing it. And then after that, I applied to another college, which is now my current college, Barnet and Southgate College in High Barnet, to do A-levels. And at the start, when I had my interviews at that college, they did not believe that I might have been competing to do that course. So they were like, okay, cool, we'll enroll you on this course, but we'll have you on trial for a couple of months. So if you weren't very competing for that course, you might be kicked out of the college or move to another course, which is easier than doing A-levels. So I thought, okay, fine. And I did that, and I proved my proficiency, thanks for the help from my teachers and everyone else. And now on my second year of A-levels, and I'll be applying for university soon.
What are you studying?
I do maths, physics and chemistry, and I'll be doing further maths as well this year.
What do you aspire to be?
I aspire to be an engineer. I feel like engineers help people. They make things better.
What sort of engineering do you want to do? You want to build things or do you want to make things? Or?
The kind of engineering I'm aspiring of doing is nuclear engineering, okay. The engineering of smaller particles.
Dare I ask what sort of universities you're aiming for?
I used to think about it as a dream, going to Cambridge, but now I am really thinking it is a goal more than a dream, and I'm really thinking of applying to Cambridge. I don't know if I'm going to be accepted or even given an offer, to be fair, but I'm up for the hard work and I'll do whatever it takes if I thought there was a bit of hope or a bit of light at the end of the tunnel.
You did win a summer school in Cambridge. You were selected. There were only 38 places.
Yeah, from around the country. I was selected to go on a summer school in Cambridge. And it was such a unique experience. I really enjoyed it. And I thought, I want to be at this university. I want to study here.
And my guess, Irene, is that whether your organisation found this accommodation for this family or not, it's a two-room flat. They've got two young men, an 18-year-old and a 23-year-old, trying to do A-level and university courses in a room that's just about got room for bunk beds. What do they do? What do you do?
I have to say the Refugee Council has been very helpful. We have gone with the Refugee Council to the council to try and get alternative accommodation. We keep struggling. It's a really, really difficult one. We'll support them in trying to find alternative accommodation, but it's really the council that has to do that. And the Refugee Council has been writing letters. Anything we can do to make your lives easier, we do. We've helped your brother with money for travel to get to university. I'm now going in as a volunteer from Hearts Welcome Syrian Families. You know, we'll help you with personal statements and helping the family as well by talking and befriending, and that's all we can do.
Does each family have a volunteer for them?
We're trying to make sure that we have volunteers doing different things for the families. So the aim is that each family should have a language support befriender. It's a learning process for both of us. I'm learning a lot about Syria. I'm learning a bit of Arabic from your parents. We laugh together. It's conversation. It's that befriending, supporting that is so important. One of the problems we're encountering in St. Albans is that the rents are very high. And so that after 2 years, the families are, not all of them, having to look for alternative accommodation. And that is a little bit unsettling because you've just begun to settle in the place you're at. You know you can't afford the rent, so you're going to have to move. So that's an area of concern at the minute for our organisation. You know, we can't help with the rent because we haven't got those sort of funds, but we've just put out an appeal for landlords, if there are landlords willing to rent properties to refugee families, and this council is very good. They will provide an incentive for that, but the properties have got to be found. So we are looking for philanthropic landlords, and we're hoping, you know, some will appear.
Karim and his brother are only just beginning their route through the world, but their parents came from an established situation where they had jobs, they had home, they had everything. And then when they arrive in a different country, it's very tough.
I think it's been very tough for your mum and dad learning surely. English. Mm-hmm. And also your father had a very good job as a carpenter. But here, to try and get a job as a carpenter, you need a good level of English. You need tools. You need a car. he has not found it easy, has he? And they've really worked hard at their English. The language they've achieved in 2 years is impressive. So we really want to continue to provide support to the families here and other refugees and asylum seekers. And we really want to respond, to keep liaising and talking to the families and saying, what do you see are the needs and how do you want to see us as an organisation develop? And to provide this language support, a really vibrant language support, befriender, volunteer network. We think that is so important. So we need help with premises. We need help with people organising an informal tea, an informal lunch. We are thinking about a volunteer driver scheme. We are trying to establish that. It's quite a difficult one across a whole county. That's why our local groups are becoming more important, and people helping in those local groups, and to keep linking the families with other English groups. And for that, we need money and we need to encourage other groups to help with this. And relying on volunteers to help us. Those are our priorities.
Great, Irene. Thank you very much. And thank you ever so much, Karen. It's really fascinating and I appreciate your time and your commitment.
Thank you.
And I wish you great success.
Thanks.
I will try to keep in touch with Irene and hope to find out also how Karim and his family get on. If you'd like to find out more about this charity and what it's doing now, and perhaps how you can help, take a look at hwsf.org.uk. That's the website, hwsf.org.uk. Some great work being done there, as indeed right across our city and district by so many other charities.